Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Baratha's News Balancing Act podcast. I'm your host, Baratha the Hutt. My co-host, Sandy the Girl Cat, is currently downstairs taking a nap. Welcome, one and all. By the time this comes out, it will be the evening of June 1st, 2020. So you'll probably be listening to this episode the following day or week. It seems like my schedule has been pretty sporadic, so looks like it's going to be every other week, and I'll try to make it every week, but, you know, my voice is not that important, if I do say so myself. A lot of things in the news, so we will definitely get right to it. So let's look at a few, articles here, and the focus of this episode will be surrounding the news coverage of the protests that are going on, that have sparked because of George Floyd. So I'm sure there's no need for reintroduction or rehashing of what happened with George Floyd and how he passed away and the disturbing actions that the police took in taking his life. So the first article that I'm looking at here is from ABC News, so the actual national ABC News website, which was published on May 29th by Ella Torres. So if you guys want to find that article, the title is Massive Eruption, Like Minneapolis Protests, is What Drives Change. Experts. So this looks like it's a little bit more towards the opinionated side of things. Why did I click on this again? Oh yeah, it was because I wanted to see how ABC News was following the protests. So let me scroll up here back to the top. So this article has a lot of interviews with people in and out of the protests. So let's get started with what Ella Torres wrote. Quote, "This is what it takes to be heard. That is the sentiment shared by a protester, sociologist, and historian on the protests that have erupted and caused destruction in Minneapolis over the death of George Floyd, a black man who was seen in a disturbing video pinned down by a white police officer. That officer, identified as Derek Chauvin, or however you want to pronounce it, was charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter on Friday. Protesters have been calling for an end to police brutality against black Americans and simply to be heard in their calls against racism. These are calls that have been made before." An article talks about Colin Kaepernick and about how people, players in different sports organizations are speaking out. Governor Tim Walz called the protests in the last 2 days, which have included fires and lootings, reckless. He said it was imperative that order be restored in order to battle real issues. Dr. Heather Thompson, a professor of history and African American studies at U of M, laughed at Walz's comments when asked about them by ABC News. She says, "I laugh because it was taken straight from a very, very long historical playbook," Thompson said. "Every federal, state, or local official in American history, when faced with protests that turn particularly chaotic, always say that this is not really a protest, that these thugs are troublemakers." President Trump referred to these protesters as thugs on Thursday morning in a tweet, I'm sure everyone knows that, word used by some to negatively describe black men. "In the 21st century, this negative imagery of black males has frequently utilized the negative connotation of the terminology thug, according to a 2016 paper from the National Center for Biotechnology Information. Even these conversations about protests," Thompson says, "are repetitive. Promises made that the people. Well, okay, let me say it again. Quote, promise. So this is Thompson. She says, promises have been made that people in charge are going to address something that's wrong, and they clearly are not addressing it. So the protests explode, and then there's always this huge debate about whether or not these protests are productive or unproductive. Ultimately, if history has taught people anything, Thompson said that it's usually not until the massive eruption in the streets that change came along. She gave the example of Black Lives Matter movement that emerged after protests in Ferguson following the killing of Michael Brown in 2014. After the AIDS protests in the 1980s, the government was pressured to think about funding treatments. It was after riots broke out in the cities in the late 1960s, particularly in Detroit and Newark, against police brutality, that President Lyndon Johnson formed a commission to address the issue. Durham, North Carolina Police Chief Sarilyn C.J. Davis, who was also the president of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, told ABC News that Floyd's death has impacted her personally and deeply. She says, I think of the many African-American young men in my life, family members and friends who have kids and nephews, and what their perception is of law enforcement and how does this impact them. She says she believes the protests are not only about Floyd, but the other black men who have died at the hands of law enforcement. Very true. Summy Banjo, a 24-year-old who lives in Oakdale, Minnesota, attended the protests on Wednesday and Thursday night, when what had been mostly peaceful protests turned chaotic. Banjo stood outside the home of Chauvin on Wednesday night, 2 days before he was charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. She told ABC News her goal was to make it clear to officials he would not be comfortable in his home. She said it was a mostly peaceful event, but she also believes in the non-peaceful protests. People are standing up for themselves, she said, but of course, there are some people whose intentions aren't true. But it shouldn't take away from the fact that we are protesting and rebelling against the system. Banjo still remembers the death of Philando Castile, who was shot to death by a Minnesota police officer in 2016. She said her own son was born the night she learned that Castile was shot and killed. I gave life to my son, and that day another black man was killed, Banjo said. She knows officials have asked for patience and civility during this time, but 4 years later she is asking how. How can you ask us for patience when time and time again you haven't given us the accountability we want? How much time do you need? Well, if history shows us anything, took quite a long time for slavery to be abolished. So, I'm not saying that that's the excuse for us to wait a long time. I'm just saying that it requires a lot of effort to dismantle inequalities. Anyway. Looking at this ABC News article, I think we can clearly see that there are a lot of interviews drawn from first-hand accounts of people participating in these protests, people who, in a way, have direct consequences on them. Like Miss Banjo, that was last interviewed, you can definitely tell that she is directly affected by the racism and the inequalities that this country has. You have a sociologist and a historian as well that have been interviewed. You have people in the police departments interviewed. So it seems like this news article from ABC News focuses a lot on the interpersonal side of these protests, which, you know, definitely we need that to bring a more humane perspective on this, like this, these specific reactions, rather than having, you know, rather than scrolling on Facebook and Twitter, just seeing people talk about riots and stuff without paying attention to the people, the majority of people who are hurting and who are trying to peacefully protest, as well as kind of, in a way, are caught in the middle for those who are minorities in the police department And then, of course, you have people who have spent years and years and years learning and studying the history and the sociology and how all these things fit together in the here and now. Let's see, the next article that I chose. Well, I apologize. This next article is from the National Review, which is a far-right news thing. this article from the National Review, titled "Anger is Justified, Riots Never Are," written by Michael Brendan Daugherty. I never know how to say that. Daugherty. I want to say Daughtry, like the artist. Also written on May 29th. So let me begin by quickly reading this. So I can already tell by the title, "Anger is Justified, Riots Never Are." Romanticizing disorganized violence is not just wrong in some factual way about how the world works. It's depraved and vile. Sometimes responsibility falls on you that you never anticipated. Sometimes history just demands that someone really should say it. Riots are bad. Riots are never a coherent or moral response to injustice. They just multiply injustices, and the rioters themselves often suffer more in the long run. I'd like a history check on that. Unfortunately, it must be said, because absolute morons who would call the cops without hesitation. And this is starting to sound like an op-ed. Let me quickly breeze through this. People who apologize for rioters say that rioting challenges the system, but of course it doesn't. Robbing and shooting Korean immigrants in LA, or nearly killing a random white truck driver, did not get anyone a tenth of an inch closer to justice for Rodney King or reform of the LAPD. These were just other barbarous crimes. Indistinct blathering about, quote, the system is an attempt to smuggle away the reputation of revolutionaries and bequeath it to rioters. But revolutionaries join targeted violence to a political rationale. If the rioters are revolutionaries, they should tell us their grievances, describe their dreamed of settlement, and show us they're burning down the right buildings and happy to shoot the right people. I think I'll just stop here. It's already stressing me out a little bit. So, already, you can feel the deep opinions the writer has about what's going on. Definitely some things I do want to clear up is that there's already a lot of evidence saying that there are a very few number of people who are instigating violence for very negative means, who are not part of the real group of peaceful protesters. Already seen firsthand accounts of people witnessing these real rioters being the ones to actually instigate a lot of these crimes just because they want to, either because they're anarchists or they really, really want to loot a Foot Locker or a Nike store or something like that. So, I don't think that the majority of people that you see on TV protesting are these people who are rioting. To be honest with you, I would be, can't believe I'm admitting this, but if I were to walk by after a peaceful protest and the Nike or Under Armour store is broken into, I might go in there because we're all wearing masks. And try to sneak out with a pair of Jordans or some sneakers from the Rock collection, right? Because that's a very, unfortunately, that's a very tempting offer. And there are just people taking advantage of this situation because they want to. And this is not an excuse. It's a little bit of an excuse. But it doesn't take away from the grievances and the sins of actually looting and destroying property. And I'm talking specifically about people who don't care about the cause and people who are there just for their own benefit. Another thing this writer talked about was, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? If writers are revolutionaries, they should tell us their grievances, describe their dreamed of settlement, and show us they're burning down the right building. Well, I don't think the protesters are want to burn down the right buildings. I don't think the protesters want to burn the buildings. I don't want to talk about the many police precincts being burned in Minnesota. That's a totally separate issue here. Here, in a trying to address the author, it's very clear what the protesters want. They have voiced it for years. Years, absolutely years. Total reform of the police department, total reform of the criminal justice system. And it's not criminal justice system, it's more or less the prison system, which is fed by the private corporations who run the prison systems. And you can talk about the lobbyists who lobby for certain laws and punishments for certain crimes, and that helps prison systems benefit a lot more. Anyway, it is very clear what these protesters want. So I'm making a fine line between the protesters and the rioters slash looters. Rioters slash looters, they're crazy folks. I shouldn't dismiss them like that. The rioters are very selfish, and willing to take advantage of this situation. That's kind of how I see it. All right, so I'm just gonna leave this right now before I start getting a headache. And we got a which one do I want? What do I want? All right, I'll take this one. Another far right. I do apologize. Another far right news source, if you call it news. Breitbart. That's right, friends. I am quoting from Breitbart, written by Ezra Dulles on May 30th. The title of this article is "Oakland Police: Two Federal Officers Shot, One Fatally During George Floyd Protest." So I'm guessing this is Oakland, California. Yep. Two DHS agents were shot, one fatally, Friday night during violent unrest in Oakland, California, as protests spread across America over the case of George Floyd, a black man who died after a Minneapolis police officer pinned his neck for nearly 10 minutes. 10 minutes, sorry. So they go through the statements here. Two Federal Protective Services officers stationed at the Oakland downtown federal building suffered gunshot wounds. Unfortunately, one succumbed to his injury, Oakland police told CNN Saturday morning. Federal Protective Services is a division of DHS tasked with defending the federal government's critical infrastructure services and the people who provide or receive them. According to police, over 7,000 protesters demonstrated Friday night and descended into vandalism, damage to businesses, arson, and assaults on several officers. Interim Chief of Police Susan Mannheimer shared a message on social media Saturday morning, urging more Californians to join the protests and to keep them peaceful. After several nights of violent riots in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, protesters across the nation destroyed property and assaulted police. Officers fired rubber bullets and tear gas at demonstrators. In Atlanta, a crowd smashed windows and threw fireworks into the lobby of CNN's headquarters. In Washington, D.C., rioters attacked Breitbart News videographer Matthew Purdy, who was capturing a clash with Secret Service at the White House for a live stream. Other demonstrations occurred in Portland, Oregon, Los Angeles, California, Dallas, Texas, Louisville, Kentucky, Charlotte, North Carolina, New York City, and Minneapolis in defiance of an 8 p.m. curfew order. Derek Chauvin, one of the four officers involved in Floyd's detainment, was arrested and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. Friday afternoon, Chauvin was caught on tape putting his weight on Floyd's neck as the man pleaded for him to stop and he could not breathe. All four were fired the day after Floyd's death. While announcing charges, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman told reporters that three of the other officers remain under investigation. Wow. Short, right to the point of events. Definitely talks a lot. Well, there's no superficial bias in opinions. I gotta say that's actually kind of refreshing versus the National Review, which I just read and immediately stopped. Interesting how Breitbart focused a lot on the specific incidents of the riots. You can already see the difference between this article and ABC News, where ABC News talks about the protesting and brings in interpersonal relations, interpersonal relations into their article. This one keeps everything as fleshed out. To me, this Breitbart article feels like it's trying to keep everything surface level to make us disconnected from the people behind everything. The only thing we're supposed to feel is that there are two officers that were shot and one that unfortunately passed away. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing for the officers. We definitely need to mourn the people that are performing their duties and trying to serve and protect and are being caught in the crossfire. But you see that here, the protesters, and specifically they use a lot of languages around the riots, that the rioters. So there's a sense of intentional disconnect, I feel like, in here. Now that I'm thinking about it, it seems like ABC News didn't really focus on the police side, the law enforcement side. So you could also argue that there's some sort of attempted disconnect at that side. And of course, it's intentional for the readers that they are trying to grab and trying to feed into certain narratives, right? So I think here, and then the focus on these quote violent riots going all happening all over the country, that you paint a picture that there are officers who are injured, one that had fatal injuries. You have a high standing officer who talks about and who wants people to protest peacefully, and then next thing you know, boom. The article talks about several riots all over the country. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Atlanta, Portland, Oregon, LA, Dallas, Louisville, Charlotte, New York. And then right at the end, they say, well, Derek Chauvin, the officer who killed George Floyd, he's been arrested. He's been charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. So it seems like to me, this article has been structured in a way that says people were hurt. Which people? The cops. I apologize for saying that in a very aggressive way. That the police were hurt. These protests are out of control. Protests are out of control all over the place. All over the country. They've even harassed a Breitbart News videographer. But they've already arrested the bad cop, the bad apple that killed George Floyd. And then it leaves. And then it leaves it. It feels like it's kind of open-ended in a way. And the way that it's structured forces you to make a quick judgment in opposition to the protesters. That's what it feels like. Anyway, another news article from Breitbart, but I'm not going to destroy you with that. And that's why I didn't choose CNN, because I knew that would be pretty terrible also on the other side. So, without any further ado, we shall go into Court of Opinion. All right, what do I think of all this? And why is my mouse so loud? I don't even know why. You guys probably know my stance already on race relations and stuff. It's always frustrating, it continually is. I did not participate in any protests here in Detroit, mainly because my dad's with me. He's been hanging out with me for 10, 11, 12 days now. Been doing a lot of stuff around the house, which has been stress relieving and allows my mind to focus on other tasks. So it's definitely a blessing to have him here. Sucks that, I can't be out there with some of my friends who are part of the peaceful protests. But yeah, I mean, Detroit, like everywhere else, there's been a big reaction to the failures of the system, failures of government to respond proactively and in a decent amount of time. You look at that ABC News article again, some of the people that were featured in that article were absolutely right in terms of looking at this seemingly very, very long waiting period, which is not justified at all. You talk about the killing of Philando Castile in 2016, and I'm sure a lot of people still remember that name and remember the peaceful protests that happened then. Fast forward to now, well, unfortunately, in the worst way I can put it, it had to take another person's life for us to do it all over again, for us to try bring it up. Probably a consequence of living in the age of social media, where instant gratification happens, where people's attentions are not gravitated towards a single thing for a very long time. Seems like, as a country, we react, we say that we love each other, we say that we will try to understand, we gotta do better. Give it a few months and then it somehow disappears again from the media. And I'm sure there's people that have been fighting nonstop for years. Philando Castile, Michael Brown, MLK. The people have been fighting for generations. And it's not taken seriously on a national level, unless something like a huge protest and riots happen that forces people to face it. It's definitely stressful. I can only imagine how much more stressful, more demanding, more taxing on the African American community. I can only imagine that. And yeah, I don't want to say that I'm getting old and that I don't want to go outside and protest. I think my time and talents can be used in a much better way, much more effective way. through other things. I mean, I definitely volunteered a lot for the Bernie Sanders campaign during the, 2020 Democratic primaries, because that's where I could use my time for a person I believed in and the platforms that Bernie Sanders embodied. Definitely, a much more proactive form than marching, protesting, and then going back to bed, going to sleep, and putting on Facebook saying, "Hey, I protested. Look at me. Look at how good I am." Right? So there's a lot of work to do. I'm still figuring out about how I can best utilize my talents, but I feel as though, I've been blessed with the opportunity to learn about inequalities, not only in this country but all over the world, learn about race relations and everything, intersectionality, and how that fits with me while I was at Villanova University. Definitely, my education there was filled with new experiences and new perspectives. So yeah, that's a shout out to Villanova. Something that I quickly put together, or a lot of things I put together. So I do have, let's see here, there we go. So I know that some people quoted from MLK from various things. Some people quoted, not really quoted, but shared memes of MLK, and then the captions reading, MLK didn't riot, he didn't break stuff, he peacefully protested and he changed the world. Well, if you believe in that, I would like you to read Malcolm X's autobiography and pay attention to the era in which these two great men shared, and how white America, how the quiet pseudo-liberal white Americans, how they gravitated towards one person over the other, and how the original intent was to just provide a little bit of freedom for the African Americans, rather than full unequivocal equality. Anyway, I don't believe that MLK would, if he was alive today, I don't think he'll go on the news and say, "Hey, everyone, stop, sit down, okay, now follow me." I don't think he'll do that, because there are speeches and writings in which he didn't say that rioting was good. He gave us a slightly different perspective. So what I'm quoting here is a speech called The Other America. Here's an excerpt on what this is. "By 1967, war, racism, and poverty had become the dominant issues confronting America and the freedom movement. On April 4th, Dr. King forcefully speaks out against the Vietnam War with Beyond Vietnam, Time to Break Silence, delivered at Riverside Church in New York City. 10 days later, in a speech at Stanford University titled The Other America, Dr. King addresses race, poverty, and economic justice. At various times in 1967 and 68, he gave slightly different versions of The Other America to other audiences." Side note, which I didn't include in these excerpts I'm going to read to you, MLK advocated for guaranteeing annual income in his speech. So, as a far-reaching statement or claim, if you like MLK, if you quote MLK, and you say that MLK is a great man, there is no way in the world you can argue against guaranteeing annual income or universal income, because that's what MLK advocated for in this speech. Anyway, here's what he says. Tragically and unfortunately, there is another America. This other America has a daily ugliness about it that constantly transformed the ebulliency of hope into the fatigue of despair. In this America, millions of work-starved men walk the streets daily and search for jobs that do not exist. In this America, millions of people find themselves living in rat-infested, vermin-filled slums. In this America, people are poor by the millions. They find themselves perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. Does that sound familiar? In a sense, the greatest tragedy of this other America is what it does to little children. Little children in this other America are forced to grow up with clouds of inferiority forming every day in their little mental skies. As we look at this other America, we see it as an arena of blasted hopes and shattered dreams. Many people of various backgrounds live in this other America. Some are Mexican Americans, some are Puerto Ricans, some are Indians, some happen to be from other groups. Millions of them are Appalachian whites. But probably the largest group in this other America in proportion to its size is the population of the American Negro. Side note, another side note. MLK recognized the poverty and injustices that are happening to Appalachian whites in the 60s. In the 60s. And look at it today. There's still inequality in West Virginia, in Virginia, for the Appalachian Americans. That sounded weird. But yeah, there's a lot of poverty there. I am pleasantly surprised and astonished and humbled that he recognized this as well. Now, these next few things are concerning the riots. So in this speech to the other America, he does address riots. Let me say, as I've always said, and I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve, that in a real sense it is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way. Again, most of the protests today are very peaceful. Few quote-unquote bad apples are the ones rioting. A lot of first-hand accounts that those that are the bad apples and causing these riots are white people. Anyway, let me go back to MLK. But at the same time, it is necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn the riots. Amen. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn the riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years, a few generations, a few hundred years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so, in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. As long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these reoccurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. So MLK already predicted this. Now let me go on to say that if we are to deal with the problems that I've talked about if we are to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, there are certain things that we must do. The job ahead must be massive and positive. We must develop massive action programs all over the United States of America in order to deal with the problems that I have mentioned. Now, in order to develop these massive action programs, we've got to get run one or two false notions that continue to exist in our society. One is the notion that only time can solve the problem of racial injustice. I'm sure you've heard this idea. It is the notion that there is something in the very flow of time that will miraculously cure all evils. And I've heard this over and over again. There are those, and there are often sincere people, who say to Negroes and their allies, the white community, that they should slow up and just be nice and patient and continue to pray, and in 100 or 200 years, the problem will work itself out, because only time can solve the problem. Well, that ain't true. I think there is an answer to that myth, and it is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. Probably, I'd say, pretty destructively in the last 20, 30 years. And I'm absolutely convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme rightists of our nation, have often used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. And it may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for vitriolic words of the bad people and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people who sit around and say, wait on time. Somewhere we must come to see that social progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals. And without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. And so we must help time. And we must realize that time is always right to do right. Now, there's another thing I'd like to mention as I talk about the massive action program. Time will not permit me to go into specific programmatic action to any great degree. But it must be realized now that Negro cannot solve the problems by himself. There again, there are those who always say to Negroes, why don't you do something for yourself? Why don't you lift yourselves by your own bootstraps? We hear this over and over again. Now, there certainly are many things that we must do for ourselves and that only we can do for ourselves. Certainly, we must develop within a sense of dignity and self-respect that nobody can give us. Definitely, I think, Malcolm X worked very hard for that, to bring back the dignity, the identity, self-respect for blacks in America. A sense of manhood, a sense of personhood, a sense of not being ashamed of our heritage, not being ashamed of our color. It was wrong and tragic of the Negro to ever allow himself to be ashamed of the fact that he was black, or ashamed of the fact that his ancestral home was Africa. And so there is a great deal that the Negro can do to develop self-respect. There's a great deal that the Negro must do and can do to amass political and economic power within his own community and by using his own resources. And so we must do certain things for ourselves, but this must not negate the fact and cause the nation to overlook the fact that the Negro cannot solve the problem himself. So yeah, very complicated set of issues. The seemingly consistent attacks, or I should say more aggressive reactions that law enforcement tend to have on African Americans, I would say definitely is an attempt to take away the self-respect that blacks have, right? You're being targeted, say for example, Mike Bloomberg's stop and frisk. That was easily a slow, methodical, psychological attack on minorities for them to lose their self-respect, right? And there have been reports out in the Minneapolis Police Department. For years, they gave more aggressive demarcations to their black officers versus white officers. They punished black officers more for the same type of crimes than white officers. If you are African American in the police force in Minneapolis and you see this, and you see this a lot, and you see this constantly, I would say that you mentally, subconsciously, would sort of start losing your self-respect, right? So the system is built to push people of color down psychologically, mentally, physically, as we've seen in so many videos and pictures of minorities being brutally apprehended by law enforcement. So, yeah, I would recommend that you read and or listen to this speech yourself. Again, a lot of people quote from this, understandably, especially the quote, "A riot is the language of the unheard," which is very true. If you scream and scream and scream and yell and cry out about your injustice, and it seems like no one is responding to you, then the only next course of action that makes sense is to have a physical response. Right. So, yeah. One more thing I'd like to share with you. back in high school in Philly, a classmate, his name is Maurice Scott. Let me be honest and say that, yeah, we didn't see eye to eye on quite a few things, but he was definitely a pretty funny guy and easy to relate to. he ended up joining law enforcement. His dad, who's also in law enforcement in Philadelphia, went to the same high school. And yeah, pretty cool story. I would definitely call him a good friend now, seeing all of the experiences and the journey he's had since high school. Definitely awe-inspiring in its own right. He's African American, again, in law enforcement. And he recently shared something on Facebook concerning the reactions around George Floyd. And he graciously allowed me to share this with all of you. So, in this Facebook post, he talked about one of the experiences he had, one of the skirmishes he's had with law enforcement, where they more or less threw him down on the ground and handcuffed him, mistaken him for, doing something. So, let me read some excerpts for you. I shared this story, the story about him and how he was handcuffed by law enforcement. I shared a story to say excessive force is not a myth from my personal testimony. Racism is not a myth. What you have seen on that video of Mr. George Floyd is not a movie. It is a very real thing. As a police officer who has been around the field since 2017, I know that officer that threw me to the ground was dead wrong. I know that former officer who had his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck was wrong. To all people, I am sworn to serve and protect. I, Officer Scott, am completely and wholeheartedly against what happened that day. I, as an officer, have had to use force on the job. I had to use my hands all the way up to the show of lethal force with my firearm. Regardless of what I used, once I was able to gain control and the cuffs went on, for most people it was over and they gave up. At that moment, it's my duty to de-escalate and ensure the safety of that individual. That is where that former officer went terribly wrong. Mr. Floyd was in the handcuffs on the ground, not resistant and begging for air. I get it. People are tired of hearing. Sorry. People are tired of hearing people talk, which is why I was hesitant to post this. But please trust and believe there are more good officers than bad. As a black man first, I came into this profession because I want to be the opposite of what that cop was to me. I want to be the one who prevents things like this Minneapolis event from happening. I want to be the one to catalyze the change that I want to see. I want to be the one to educate people on police actions to help bridge that gap. I want to be the officer that people aren't afraid of to come to for help. I leave all of you with this. If anyone wants to talk, curse me out, ask me questions, etc., I am here for it. I'd rather you come to me and we can learn from each other than drawing a line between us. To Mr. Floyd and his family, I pray God comforts and leads them to make a change that is needed. So yeah, thanks Maurice for letting me share this with everyone. Yeah, being in the front lines is very difficult, especially when you choose to do so in this hostile environment, in this hostile time. You will change the narrative. I know you will. Your history, your experience, your journey has shown me that you reach out to people in very positive ways. So, again, thanks, Maurice, for, you know, putting your boots on the ground and working hard every second of every day to try and provide open arms for people to have successful dialogue, for all of us to actually find this peace and justice. If any of you would like to talk to me about anything, if you want me to give Maurice any responses or any of your thoughts on things, if you have any questions about some of these articles, please reach out at bnbapodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's bnbapodcast@gmail.com. All right, now let's have some happier news when we go over to Barathatan the Science Man. Hello, everyone. This is Barathatan the Science Man, and I think you all know what I want to talk about. Yes, that is right. The recent SpaceX liftoff. I would definitely say historic launch of the SpaceX crew on the Dragon capsule. It's definitely a sight to behold. I hope you all saw the live stream of that. One of the things in which is historic is that it's the first time in almost 10 years that American astronauts have left to space from American soil. Yep, the last time astronauts have left for space from U.S. soil was during the space shuttle programs. One of the things in which I'm excited about is that because SpaceX is a private company, and they've not only successfully created shuttlecrafts that can be partially recycled, it definitely shows that not only our government, not only NASA could benefit from cheaper alternatives, it shows that private enterprise can help drive innovation. Of course, in a very selective, safe, and regulated way. I'm not going to get into Elon Musk. I do have, even as Barathatan the Science Man, I do have reservations about Elon Musk as a human being. SpaceX absolutely is It draws upon all of the dreams, all of the inspirations, all of the excitement of discovery. So what I'm looking at right now is an article from GeekWire, written yesterday, May 31st. Closer than humanly possible, new launch pad photos capture historic SpaceX liftoff in all its glory. I recommend that all of you look at it because the pictures are absolutely breathtaking. Of course, with COVID-19, it's unfortunate that, you know, there wasn't any official gathering of people to actually watch the liftoff. But just seeing it lift off from the Kennedy Space Center was amazing. And of course, hopefully you've all also been following the astronauts. They successfully docked onto the ISS, and they were able to get into the ISS very safely. So job well done, SpaceX. Job well done, NASA. I know a friend who works at NASA who was part of all of the efforts to get these astronauts to the ISS. Thanks so much, Sam, because this is absolutely amazing. Well, speaking about COVID-19, it's pretty hilarious how 2 weeks ago I was talking about vaccines and stuff, and then boom, news articles about potential vaccine working, having very positive responses from patients. I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty funny. I talked about that. So I remember seeing an article on Johnson & Johnson having some sort of vaccine ready to test. So definitely very cautiously optimistic about vaccines being available by next year. So we'll see what happens. Definitely there are a lot of states that are starting to reopen certain sectors in their economies, so that's a positive way. Of course, you have to keep all the regulations and you have to still take care of people. We'll see how things go. Again, cautiously optimistic about everything, so we'll see what happens. Going back to SpaceX, I read a slightly older article on clickorlando.com that was written, where was that? May 20th, that SpaceX's Falcon rockets have an over 99% success rate. Up 97.7 success rate. So, again, very good. Very amazing. Glad to see us flying back to space again on our soil. Because that means I don't have to travel to a different country in order to see a space launch. Space launch. Holy moly, I can't speak. The engineering behind this rocket is also pretty amazing. Falcon 9 is a two-stage, partially reusable rocket powered by 9 Merlin 1D engines that use a combination of liquid oxygen and rocket-grade kerosene for fuel. Those 9 engines produce as much thrust as 2747 engines. The system is so robust that, according to SpaceX, 2 of the 9 engines can fail. The rocket can still be able to push its payload into the correct orbit. Jeez, that's amazing. This Falcon rocket looks very similar to the Saturn rockets used in the 60s during the space race. Very long, elongated. The actual capsule itself, I believe it's called the Dragon capsule, yeah, is at the tip. Just like the Saturn rocket, where the capsule where the astronauts are at the top, and there are a lot of engines and thrusters that are used. So anyway, thank you all guys for listening. Baratha the Hutt just mentioned our email address. Again, feel free to reach out to us for any questions, any comments. If you would like to reach out to Maurice, I'll make sure he'll get any messages. And if you have any topics you want me to look at or any specific articles that you want me to do a real deep dive on, I'll definitely will. So thank you guys, and I'll steal this from Broth of the Hut. See hope through all things, my friends.